Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to this week's episode of Emily Talks. We have Lizzo playing because we are talking DNA test today with David Barry. I'm here with my co-host Dave Wenis. Dave?
I am here. Hello. Happy Father's Day, everybody. Sorry, I'm over here trying to work the board and try
Happy
to do
Father's
this.
Day.
I was trying to learn. I was trying to figure out how to lower things down, but couldn't get it going there. Sorry about that.
That's okay. We got Lizzo talking about a DNA test. And again, the reason for that, we have Dave Barry here today. Dave has such an interesting story that when I decided to do a podcast, he was on my like first draft list of guests. He is a phenomenal writer. And he has put together this blog about his DNA test experience called The Barry Chronicles. So whatever you hear today, I'm sure it'll be wonderful, but it will not be as good as reading his blog. So you definitely need to check that out at the Barry Chronicles. I think it's barrychronicles.com, but I'll verify that. Do we have David on the line?
Yes, we do. Let me bring him on in right now.
Okay. So I met
cool.
Dave.
Dave, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Thank you, guys.
Okay. Dave and I met we haven't met in person, I don't think. But he had this really cool concept YouTube show where he would have dinner. He and Armando Alvarez in Miami would have dinner and talk boxing. And I just thought it was the coolest format. And so I used to watch that. And over the years, you know, we followed each other on social media. And when he said he was launching this newsletter, I was like 100% on board. And it turned out to be so much more of just a really incredible story than I was expecting. So Dave, welcome. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I appreciate you guys having me and for the intro. I love that you guys are doing this. And I'm a huge fan of Leaving in the Ring, I could also say. So.
Oh, thank you. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Definitely.
So Dave, why don't we start? Why don't you give us the basic, you know, elevator pitch version of your story, and then we'll kind of dig in a little bit on, you know, some of the pieces.
Yeah, a lot of people, I've done the math, I think it's like 15 million people have done these, you know, spit in the vial and send it in the mail type of DNA tests, whether it's, you know, Ancestry.com or 23andMe, MyHeritage, you know, those types of things. And it was Christmas 2016, I was sitting around a table with, you know, with my own family and my sister and her then boyfriend's family, who she's actually getting married next month. But we were just talking about, you know, funny stories that have happened, things that people learned, you know, about their heritage. One kid that we knew grew up in the same town as us in Western New York. He had like an Italian coat of arms tattoo, like, you know, on his shoulder, and took an ancestry test and found out he was totally Irish. And we just thought that was hilarious.
Oh, wow.
You know, which, I mean, if you imagine, right, getting that tattooed on your body and you're not even close. But so, you know, I was sitting there talking to my folks, and my father's father passed away at a really young age when he was 39 years old. So my dad was seven. And I was like, you know, I know a lot about my mom's side of the family, not a lot about my dad's. I was like, yeah, I'm going to, you know, order one of these tests. And I did it right there in front of them, you know, at around Christmas dinner, and didn't really think a lot of it. So I got my, you know, the kit in the mail, sent it in. Results come back 6 weeks later. My father's side of the family is Irish, Italian is, you know, is what we understood. And my results came back and showed me as half Jewish, which on my mom's side of the family did. And, you know, things just didn't make sense from there. It's pretty much the story in short.
Wait, so hold on. Let's back up here real quick, because I'm just curious. So your family had never told you this before? I mean, you know, so you didn't know anything that was going on, right? You just expected to just kind of be reassured what you thought you already knew? Is that what happened?
Yeah. My dad knew that his dad was Irish,
in general, you know, but it was likely, as, you know, as so many people in America, that there's, you know, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. No one was expecting, or at least certainly not me, that my other side of my family would show up as entirely Jewish. In order for half of me to be Jewish, that meant that one of my parents was entirely Jewish. And that didn't make sense, you know, to me, although it's possible that there's things you just don't know about your heritage. And yeah, but right. I was totally caught off guard, exactly as, you know, as you implied. I had no sense that this is what would be there.
And how about your family? So, how about your dad? Was he like caught off guard with that, or did he look like, yeah, that makes sense?
Yeah, so this is where things got interesting, and I know I'm sort of like burying the lead a little bit of ultimately what I discovered, and I can sort of spoil the ending. But it took about 6 months for of me sort of researching, digging a little deeper, taking breaks and whatever, of my parents ultimately revealing to me that my dad is not my biological father, that I was ultimately conceived through sperm donation, and that, yes, that had been kept from me. And my parents had, you know, I didn't think they'd be good liars, but but they had really kept, you know, a good poker face throughout this whole process, playing kind of a degree of ignorance, which is just like, you know, hey, we don't really know how these DNA work type of thing. All the while, you know, now in hindsight, understanding that I think they were terrified that this thing that they'd kept secret up until that point of like 33 years was going to get blown wide open. And so, and yeah,
I think a lot of people do these tests, and there's like a, you know, a chance you might be interested in doing this test. There's a chance you might not be, right? Like, I haven't done it. I don't have this burning desire, but you seem, based on what you've, you know, what I read throughout your blog, you seem sort of interested in, you were interested in your heritage to begin with. You kind of had adopted that Italian heritage, and you spent, what was it, like 5 years learning Italian, right?
Yeah. Yeah. From my early, I guess, late in middle school all the way through high school. Because it was, you know, a part of, I never really had much of a relationship with my dad's side of the family growing up. And so taking Italian was like the part that I could sort of gain access to in some ways. And mm-hmm. I'm glad I get a tattoo like that other guy did, because it turns out there's not an ounce of Italian blood in my body.
And the irony, I, you know, it kind of struck me when I was listening or reading, I'm sorry, the blog about the dinner you guys had at Christmas, and it was like a full-on Italian dinner, sort of celebrating that part of your heritage, and then that didn't turn out not to be.
Pasta, cannolis, the whole thing, and and instead I'm Jewish and German, which is interesting. Yeah.
And so you, there was a time from the time that you took the test, got the results, and really sort of tried to come to terms with this new information. There was 6 months between then and when your parents actually revealed that they had in fact used a sperm donor.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. I, you know, at first I brought that to them, you know, as anybody would when they see a test result like that, that makes no sense to them. And they were like, oh, wow, you know, we don't really know, you know, how, well, you know, what sense to make of that either. And now at the time, too, another thing that stuck out to me was,
how did that get in there?
Right, exactly.
Right.
And it's funny, too, because to some extent I allowed to play ignorant, too, right? Which is like, okay, well, my dad doesn't know a lot about his, you know, his own father because he passed away at such a young age. So maybe he was Jewish. You know, like there was plausible deniability in there somewhere. Not as much as I needed, but enough of it to make me not think too hard about it. But I also had a very high match with a woman who I'd never heard of. And the ancestry.com will give you sort of a prediction of like the types of relationships you could have. So in this particular match, it said this person is close enough to be a grandparent, a first cousin, an aunt, or a half sibling. And so I immediately start going to the thing that feels most logical. Now, at that point, I, you know, an aunt wouldn't make sense because I would have grown up with one. A grandparent, you know, I knew who my grandparents were. You know, a half sibling just was not even on the radar because, you know, I grew up with a sister and, you know, and two parents, and that was our family.
And so I immediately went to like, okay, maybe she's a first cousin. You know, I had an uncle who'd gotten out of the military in the mid-80s, was always a little short on cash. And like, yeah, maybe he donated sperm. So, you know, I started conjuring up this little story, and I think my parents hoped I would drop it. But they also didn't want me going around accusing an uncle of being a sperm donor. So they were like, you know, like, just don't go poking into that, you know, type of thing. And I was still kind of oblivious. And, yeah, I sort of let it go for a little bit. You know, as I continued to hit a wall, this girl that I'd matched with, we exchanged messages, and she told me she'd been conceived through, you know, through a sperm donor. So that's when I assumed it could have been my uncle, but neither of us had any more insight. And until around September, at this point, I guess of 2017, in a funny twist, my wife is adopted, and so is her sister. Her sister came over that night in September and said, "Hey, look, I want to tell you guys I found my biological half sister and my biological father." And she was telling us, you know, all these measures of common DNA that she has with this half sister that she found on Ancestry. And she's, you know, telling us the numbers. She's like, yeah, we have over 1,100 centimorgans, you know, in common. The centimorgan is a measure of shared DNA between you and another person. And so I'm sitting there listening, and she's saying this. I'm like, wait a second. I think I have more DNA in common with this girl that I matched with, you know, 4 or 5 months ago than she does with her own half-sister. So I, you know, she's talking, and I'm pulling open the website again. And this girl and I, her name is Morgan, we have over 1,500 centimorgans common. So immediately alarms start going off in my head that like I've stumbled on something, and I don't know what it, you know, what the details are, but I'm really starting to smell that something's off. And Morgan and I, we upload our raw data from this DNA to a third party site called GEDmatch. And what that site basically does is it'll tell you if you share paternal or maternal DNA. And so we, you know, uploaded our information to that, and it takes a while for the information to process. The next morning, we learned that we have paternal DNA in common and another match. We have a brother. That's what it predicted, that we had a half brother. So I called my parents, you know, to the altar on that night, and I was like, "Look, there's another one, and it's saying that we're half siblings." I was like, "I'm not accusing anybody of anything. I'm just telling you what these numbers say." And and sort of went to bed that night, and we're like, "Look, you know, sweetheart, we're really not sure what it's about. You know, we admit to not really understanding a lot about what's in there." And then the next night I got a phone call from my father, and well, at first it was a text message, and I get a text from my dad. He, you know, he'll text me once in a while, but rarely, you know, at the time of night that he did. And I looked down at my phone, and I just felt in my gut that something was going to happen. He was going to tell me something. And I called him. And he was like, "Are you home?" And I said, "No, I'm, you know, I'm about to get in the car." And I was like, I got Bluetooth in my car, I can talk." And he was just, you could tell he was reluctant. And I was like, "Dad, what? I obviously know something is going on. What is going on?" And he said, "You know, I know you've been digging into this DNA stuff, but you're trying to find information about, you know, my father and, you know, my family. And I just want to let you know you're not going to find it." And I immediately had this, you know, sense that like the truck is going to get pulled over me, because, you know, for 6 months he's been saying, "You know, I don't know how this DNA stuff works," and now all of a sudden he's certain that I'm not going to find, you know, information about his father. And you know, he tells me that I'm not his biological son.
And wow, man,
that's a hell of a phone call to get.
I'm curious, Dave, of I'd like to kind of backtrack a little bit if we can, man, if it's possible.
Yeah, yeah. I took you down a rabbit hole pretty fast.
Yeah. I did the whole Ancestry thing just about 3 months ago, I think. A little bit, maybe a little longer than that, you know. And my wife actually got it for me for my last year, for my birthday last year. Not this one that just passed. But and I sat on it. And I sat on it because I was like, do I really want to know, like, everything about my family, blah, 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 you know. Because I kind of pretty much thought, I know everything about my family. Like, I know everything about my dad, about my mom, you know. But then I went, I'm going to go check it out, you know. But I didn't get hit with nothing, like, that I didn't like I didn't know, you know, but it was in the back of my mind, like, wow, what if it ends up like this? These are not my parents, right? Like, and so my question for you is, okay, so you do this. What were the emotions you were going through, like, immediately when you started, like putting things together? Like, were you in denial for a short bit? Like, this is just kind of weird. I'm going to leave it alone. I'll let it sit there. Or were you upset? Like, were you slowly getting angry, going, like, did my parents lie to me? Like, am I being a fool here? Did I just get duped in believing something for so many years?
That's a good question. At first I felt – I think part of me was hopelessly naive, or hopefully naive, in the early stages where I was like, I believe, like so many people did, that like the family that I have is my family, biological and otherwise. I'd never had reason to question it. And people always ask me, like, you know, well, if you never looked like your dad, didn't you always just wonder? And I was like, well, yeah, maybe a little bit, you know, but I was like, well, I look more like my mom, you know, and it just sort of is what it is. I didn't go to such great lengths. And then part of you just wants to do everything you can to reinforce the story that you've always been told. It's not in anybody's natural, you know, instinct to say, hey, I have a reason to believe that I've been lied to or withheld a certain truth for my entire life. I will say I only became sort of angry is maybe, it's not entirely the word, but it's not wrong, but in the last week before I found out, because I continued to get information that made no sense, and my parents didn't seem interested in helping me, you know, uncover it. And I'm like, well, at a minimum, I think that I have found, you know, my parents' niece, you know, my first cousin. Why is no one interested in understanding that? And, you know, and this woman, you know, who I'd matched with, Morgan, I mean, she lives, you know, in Rochester, New York, where I grew up. And I'm like, I was getting frustrated at that point. Right. And then, you know, when I was told, it's weird, right? You know, to choose the emotion that you feel.
When I did the whole ancestry thing, I got to tell you the truth here to both of you guys, you and Emily. I was actually kind of hoping it was going to come back and say, these are not your parents. And I was going, oh, it explains everything then, you know, that's the reason why I am the way I am. But no, I was disappointed, man. I'm going to have to call them up and let them know. Like, they really dropped the ball for me. You know, no, I'm kidding. You know, I love you, Mom. I love you, Dad. But continue, brother.
Dave, you mentioned that you knew your parents had struggled to start a family. They had told you that. So I don't understand how you'd have that conversation in context and them not say, and here's how we ended up doing it at any point.
I know. I've brought that to their attention since then. And so, you know, to that point, for anyone who hadn't read what you did, yeah, my parents they were married in 1979, and they had, you know, pretty clear ambitions of having a honeymoon baby, and I wasn't born until September of 84. So, you know, do the math. It's 5 years. It's a long time for a couple that's trying. And I knew that they, you know, had obstacles, but you know, they happened to leave out a really important component of what those obstacles entailed and helping them overcome it. And what I've tried to do, and people ask me, like, are you angry? Are you mad at your parents? And the truth is, I'm not. And maybe part of that is self-preservation. A therapist could probably help me explore that. But the real feeling that I had was putting myself in their shoes, which is there was no such thing as consumer DNA testing in the 80s, not even in the 90s or early 2000s. You know, like, this is just
right,
in the
right.
past 5 or so years. So if I'm in their shoes, you know, in the early 80s, I'm thinking how hard it is for couples to talk about infertility even now when it's less of a taboo. You know, I understand that in large part they were doing what they thought was right. And they told me, you know, I asked them straight up, did you guys ever plan to tell me this? And they said, you know, at periods of time we were like, well, we'll tell you when you're, you know, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years old, when you can start to understand
they're
it.
Like,
and
no,
then you get
we're
there.
Gonna leave you a letter.
right.
We were planning to leave you a letter. We were gonna tell you.
Yeah, just send it through FedEx, you know, and they're like, oh, well, maybe when you're 16 or 18, like those milestone birthdays. And every time they got there, they were like, why are we going to blow this life up, you know, if we don't have to? And
I think everyone deserves the truth, period, end of story, you know, about who they are and where they came from. And so from my position, yeah, I absolutely always would have wanted to know. But from their perspective, you know, I could imagine the fear of having raised a family and then your kids finding out at some point saying, well, you're not my real dad or you're not my real family. You know, I think that fear, especially to my father, was very real. And so in that
respect, I mean, if you're listening to this and you read nothing else, you got to read the first two blog entries, or first two or three blog entries of Dave's blog, because, and this is where, I mean, I guess I kind of get the idea of being upset, but your dad's reaction, like, I lost my dad 2 years ago, right? So I miss him constantly, you know, and to hear your dad's reaction, the way that you described it, that he was, when he called you to tell you the truth, finally, he was, you know, hysterical, crying hysterically. And I mean, it really moved me, because I was like, God, he loved him so much. Like, there was never, you know, I guess
that's
maybe
the scariest thing,
it,
I think.
Yeah, like he would be afraid that you would turn on him, or, and it's similar to
right.
Just reading here, the same, when you were concerned about your sister finding out, like your sister that you grew up with finding out,
yeah.
You were afraid that she would pull away from you. So it's kind of the same sort of feeling, no?
Yeah. Yeah, it was very much like that. If I had a lens into, you know, my father at all through this, it was what I felt. So I found out on a Wednesday over the phone. My family, they all still live in Rochester, New York. I live in Miami, Florida. And, you know, they told me, you know, once the first wave of tears subsided, that they said, you know, we would have wanted to tell you in person, but you were just so close. It would have seemed weird to say, hey, Dad's going to fly down to Miami for the weekend, you know. But they wanted to wait a couple of days to tell my sister in person, and they did. And so it was 2 days between me knowing and my sister finding out. And those 2 days are, they were torturous. I would never want to go through anything like that, because my sister and I are very, very close. And I couldn't imagine anything ever coming between us. And the truth is, though, just because I knew that I still loved and, you know, saw my father as my father, it didn't mean that that was going to be the same reaction my sister had. And yeah, I hoped, you know, that she would take it well, but I didn't know. And so that was a lens I used to sort of understand my father, which is, you know, he has not had a relationship with his own, you know, family since I was 5 years old. And so my sister and I are his family, or his kids, we're it. And so if, you know, if I'm looking at it through that lens, that there's this moment where I might lose both of my kids, I just couldn't imagine the fear. That, you know, of being in his shoes in a situation like that. And
that's something as a father, as myself, that is probably one of the hardest things that your dad went through. You know how many sleepless nights, or him having this conversation in his head of how he's going to break this to his son, you know, because
yeah.
You know, I always tell my kids that you don't know love until you have children of your own. Like you're going to love your spouse, your whoever you decide to live the rest of your life with. But when it's your, regardless if it's your flesh and blood, when you raise a child from the beginning and you put your whole heart into it, man, there's nothing that will ever replace the feeling of your kid's eyes looking at you. Nothing will ever replace that.
And it's not
fortunate.
The lens that I have. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you.
No, I was just going to say that, you know, my husband, you know, when I met him, he's a dad, but he has a son, you know, on the weekends sometimes. Sometimes it would be months, you know, in between, because his mom would move out of the state. And I'll tell you, like, the way that he is with Nicola, like, it's been so amazing to watch. He is so absolutely head over heels in love with this kid. And it's really kind of, I think it's brought us really close. Like, I didn't expect that, but it's brought us closer, just enjoying being his parents, you know?
Yeah. Dave, I got a question. Your dad, does your dad have that old school Italian accent, like the soprano accent, or no?
No, he doesn't. It's and it's funny because the question I originally set out to answer was, you know, how much of him is Italian. I know that his mother was born in Italy, but his father, we still believe was Irish. So, but because, you know, his mother had, you know, lived in the United States most of her life. Yeah, the influence of the Italian culture on the family was smaller than it would be perhaps in other families. So yeah, he's not like a super Italian guy, but a lot of my friends.
Oh man, I was like hearing in my head your dad telling you know the whole story, like, hey, listen, pity bang, pity bang, it's not you, you're not my kid. You know what I'm saying? Forget about it, no doubt about it.
Forget about it, right?
I don't know.
When we do a documentary, man, maybe it's a little harder.
You should have caught on to that at the beginning. You're like, how come I don't sound nothing like my dad over here, you know? My dad uses his hands to talk with everybody about everything, you know, and I don't. Oh, what's going on here? That's the first sign that I would have noticed that I was a kid.
It is funny. Dave. You know, it's funny you would say that, though. Go ahead, Emily.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was simply just going to say, you know, like, when you find out that your dad's not your biological father, you do sort of look at everything else that has happened in your entire life through a different lens. So like, as an example, you know, the Italian thing wasn't part of it, but I played varsity basketball as a junior in high school. Like, I wasn't bad, but my dad was like, you know, at that point he was 27 years older than me. So he's like 43, 44 years old when I'm playing varsity, and he's, you know, still smoking cigarettes and stuff, you know, comes home from work and just destroys me and my friends. Like, he's so good. At the age of 43, I'm a varsity basketball player, right? And I'm like, what the hell, man? Like, I'm playing every day, and I'm a teenager. Like, you know, it's just like, oh, well, it makes sense, you know, like that sort of stuff. You know, my dad was just a superior athlete, and I was passable, but I didn't have these genes.
Right.
So I'm like, oh, well, I guess that finally makes sense, you know.
So
was he doing it? Was he playing
happened.
Basketball with scars? Well, was he doing that? Because that would even make
that?
It even more epic. I said, when he was beating you guys, was he doing it with a cigar in his mouth while he was playing? That would have been epic.
I know, man. No, by the time we were teenagers and we were good enough, he actually, you know, he gave his full effort, but it was usually enough.
Right. Patting you on the back saying, "No worries, son, you'll get there soon."
Right.
You ended up, how many siblings did you end up with at the end of all of this so far? Because I'm assuming this is like, you know, an ongoing thing, right?
It is. Yeah. So on the day that I discovered my father, you know, was not my biological father, I was essentially given two half siblings because I'd found, you know, one of them who had been communicating with, sorry, my dog is whining here. I'd been communicating with one of them for, you know, about 6 months through messaging. That was Morgan. And then we found, another one, like, I guess 2 days prior, named Thomas. We found him on this GEDmatch website. And so he found out, you know, essentially the same day that I did, that we were siblings. And so there were really just the three of us at first for, gosh, close to a year. And a really weird twist to this is the three of our families actually met up and had dinner one night in Rochester, New York. And it was like, just this amazing moment, you know, like everything comes full circle, and it was just spectacular seeing our families interact. And we go to bed, and the next morning I wake up to a text message from Thomas saying, there's another one. And we were oblivious to the fact, naive to the fact that there could have been anything else. And it turns out there were in fact two. It's that he had matched with one girl, but she has a twin sister. So that day we found out there were number four and five, and then fast forward, you know, over the next 6 to 10 months, there were two others, additional brothers, one of whom, and this is where things get, you know, even weirder. He and I were classmates together in middle school, and guess what class we took together?
No.
Italian.
No.
Oh.
Holy smokes.
Were any of them in a same situation where they didn't expect this or know that there was a sperm donor involved?
Did this
anybody up the way it did you, I guess, is what I'm asking.
A little bit, yeah. We're about half and half. You know, new up. So, you know, one of the, Morgan, for example, her father had been in a a motorcycle accident and was paralyzed early on in the parents' marriage. So, you know, they wanted to say pretty plainly, like, hey, you know, obviously dad would not be able to conceive through no means. This is how you were made, type of thing. Thomas, his mother, is a lesbian, and, you know, obviously there were no men in the picture growing up, so she always was clear with him. But yeah, for the most part, the rest of us were discovering this sort of anew.
Wow.
And, you know, yeah.
Are we going to see you guys in an Ancestry commercial?
I don't know. Some of them are not, you know, too keen on being as open about the story, I guess, as I have been. But yeah, I wouldn't rule anything out.
You guys can all go on a commercial like this where it says, that would definitely would work, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that's hysterical.
Hey, Dave, let me ask you this. Which one of your siblings didn't take it as well, though? Like, which one of them was having a really tough time grasping the truth of about what was going on?
You know, I would say Morgan, Thomas, and I all did a really nice job of embracing it together. And, you know, I feel really fortunate to have gone through this with the two of them, because that's something that so few people will ever experience or understand. And we had each other. But I will say, you know, the one who was my middle school classmate, his name's CJ, I think he had perhaps, you know, the toughest time out of all of us for different reasons. He had had some health issues, like, I guess, a year prior to, you know, to taking his ancestry test, and grew up, you know, his father that raised him passed away at a very young age. He was 36 years old.
36.
And a host of, you know, health issues and stuff, heart related. And so CJ had, you know, a health issue that, you know, the year prior, that made him believe, you know, this was the product of inherited heart issues. And come to find out, you know, he never had heart issues. They were not hereditary. You know, there was something, you know, going on with him, but part of it, his doctors were looking at all the wrong indicators, because they were looking at hereditary information that was not there. And so I know, you know, in particular, that was an obstacle for him. And that was, you know, a whole host of other different emotions to get through. And, you know, when that came up, my parents then said, yeah, for sure. If, you know, if it came down to some sort of a medical issue where, God forbid, you needed a, you know, a kidney donated or something like that, like, we would have had no choice but to come out with it. But that, you know, was not the case with CJ, and I know he certainly struggled with that. It was not an easy process.
I have a really important question. Where did El Rey de España come from?
You know,
I was looking, and I thought, even before I saw the caption where you're like, yep, that's the name, you know, and I was like, is that what he calls himself? Like, that's
it's funny. So what Emily is referring to is the name that I gave, like, my Ancestry.com profile, which was, yeah, calling myself El Rey de España, which means the King of Spain. And part of that was because, you know, after a while, when there was, like, an influx of new siblings, I tried to put a stop to it for a while, and I didn't want my name out there, because I needed to take some time and just not
process
be
it.
The world's
yeah.
And so, yeah, I changed. I don't know where it was. It was totally stream of conscience just to call myself the King of Spain, which probably raised even more questions for people on a DNA journey matching to a Jewish
right.
kid, the King of Spain. But
I was like, what is? Have you embraced the Jewish part of your ancestry now? I mean, have you? I know, because, like I said, I think that this is something that would have been of interest to you had you known.
Yeah.
Like, you seem to be, you know, engaged in this topic and these things. So how has that impacted you?
It's interesting because the parallel path that I have is I had been dating my girlfriend for, I guess, about a year and a half, maybe years at that point. And she, like I said, is adopted, but was raised Jewish. So, and it was funny because I always felt like the outsider you know, around like her family and stuff. As you know, anybody who knows, you know, the Jewish community knows they're really tight knit and, you know, tend to be clicky, you know, like the way a lot of, you know, other, you know, ethnic groups are. They, you know, they stick to a lot of their groups of people and stuff like that. So part of me felt like an outsider, and her mom, you know, had never held it against me that I wasn't Jewish, but on the first Passover, when she found out I was, you know, announced it to the whole family. You know,
oh, she came
really
and hugged you. She came and hugged you finally.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She was really, yeah. For the first time, right? No. No, she's always
you
been great to me.
They're one of us.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. She finally invited you to the table for dinner. Him, come sit down, Dave. Served you
right,
first.
Yeah. The tribe, they call it, you know. So that was, it was interesting because I had a new lens into the experience of my wife. But here's one of the things that I don't want to say I've battled with it, but it's been, you know, like a question mark in my head is, you know, the history, you know, of Jewish people and how much of their identity, for better or worse, is wrapped up in this major atrocity. And part of me felt like an imposter to try to adopt that heritage, because I've been masquerading, you know, like sort of wearing a mask, you know, like through my whole life, just, you know, operating as like this European without, you know, blonde and blue eyed, essentially, now bald and blue eyed, but
like
never really being able. Yeah, exactly. But never really being able to, or not having to suffer any of the obstacles that come with maybe being like saying that you're Jewish or being Jewish. Cause I'd never faced any of those obstacles that they had. So part of me has been, I don't want to say reluctant, but like I've never wanted to pretend to have been Jewish the whole time, when the reality is I just discovered it. And that feels insincere to like fully adopt that heritage. But in an interesting way, it's helped me understand and feel closer to, you know, to my wife and her family and their experiences and traditions. And that's been pretty cool.
That is cool.
Yeah.
I want to ask you some business questions because I want to get your opinion on some stuff. Dave, do you have any other DNA questions? I think I'm going to do this. I'm going to do the Ancestry DNA. So one of these future shows, when I get it back, I'll let you guys know what it says. But
I look forward to that.
That'd be nice. Yeah. No, it is really interesting. I end up finding out a lot of stuff that I have that I didn't even know. I was like, what the hell? Like, I got like 2% French. I was like, wow.
Right.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, a wee. Yeah.
What's the best one to get? Is it Ancestry or 23andMe?
You know, it's interesting. I think
Either of you guys?
David, you can answer that.
I just use the Ancestry. I mean, I have never heard of the 23, so I mean, like I said, but this was a gift. I think my wife was trying to. I think my wife was hoping that it was going to come back and say my parents weren't my parents, so that she could now finally justify disowning them and not wanting to go and visit them. I think that was the plan, and it backfired.
Don't say that. What if her parents are listening? That's not cool, Dave. What are you doing?
It's okay. It's okay. My parents know.
They vary.
The good thing is my parents are as about as horrified as I am, so they got a great sense of humor.
And yeah, Emily, to your question, I would say, at once upon a time, 23andMe was known a lot more for like the traits that come from your DNA and what they say about you, whereas Ancestry was designed to be, you know, for like building family trees and that sort of thing. But both of them have kind of caught up with you now, you know, in that sense, where they're able to tell you based on research of people who share your DNA, you know, different biological traits and things like that, where like predictors of, gosh, anything you can imagine, you know, like your ability to digest protein, like stuff that's that granular, and up to, you know, more generic, like your propensity to, you know, gain muscle easily or whatever. But so yeah, both of them offer those now, and it can be pretty fascinating, provided that you don't encounter any major secrets in the process.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine.
You
know that my son has done it. Huh?
Emily, you should do yours live. If you do it, and
like open
when
it
you
live?
Get back the results, yeah, that'd be great. Because, like, what if it comes back, you're like a second cousin to Donald Trump, and you never knew that, and you're
live
here.
Live on the radio. Dave, where can people, before we move on to the, I have a couple questions for you to get your opinion on something, but where can people read this story? And you have it on video too, which is also cool because I kind of started it on video. And I think that sort of lent itself to some of the emotions I was having. I mean, I texted Dave and I was like, why am I crying? You know, I was like distraught after listening to the first two episodes.
So if anybody wants to read the blog, which I do agree is the longer form, you know, better, richer version, is barrychronicles.com. Barry spelled with an E, B-E-R-R-Y. And then there's the YouTube channel by the same name. You can check out either of those. The blogs are way more up to date, more videos on YouTube, but you can check them out both on those.
I want to know from, so you, for your business, you do marketing and branding, that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, but primarily like on the digital aspect side of things, but yep.
Tell me, who's had sort of the best, what brands have really just screwed it up in the last couple of weeks between COVID and George Floyd, and, you know, what brands have kind of screwed the pooch on that?
Man,
the way they've,
you know,
handled it. I have some different examples.
I wish I'd come better prepared to answer that one, because I don't have like a ton of specifics. But I'll tell you right now, one of the brands that's getting its ass kicked, if I can, you know, say so, is Facebook, because they've mishandled a lot of, like, the labels that go on, you know, Donald Trump's posts and stuff like that. Whereas other social channels like Twitter were fast to respond, and they've also been, you know, sort of dragged a little bit for the lack of diversity on their board while preaching diversity, you know, through their messaging and stuff like that. And so some brands pulled a lot of their advertising off of Facebook entirely. One of those brands was the North Face. So I would say, you know, Facebook is one. But really any brand that's just saying, like, any of that repetitive crap, like, we're all in this together, or, you know, like, it's all that sort of crap. Yeah, Black Lives Matter, but we don't have any diversity on our board at all.
Exactly.
We have, and, you know, those are the brands that are rightfully being brought to task, because if you don't have diversity as a value of your organization, then don't try to, like, you know, rally the troops to join a cause that you're only paying lip service to. So that's, you know, that's one of the things that we've seen. And, for, you know, good news is that's none of the brands that we're working with.
Oh, that's good. Talk to me about Snapchat, their Juneteenth filter that had chains on the person, and then when you'd had to smile, you know, like on Snapchat, you either smile or raise your eyebrows to, like, activate it to do something. You smile, and the chains come off. That seems,
I can't,
like, not.
It's, yeah, like, you smile about, you know, about the emancipation of the slaves and you break the chains. Like, Juneteenth is not the time to be telling white people, you know, to smile and unlock the chains of slavery. Like, that's not really the key. And this is also from Snapchat.
It seemed,
you know,
like, who let that through?
Well, they're the same ones, I think it was like 4 or 5 years ago, who had a poll and a similar setup where it was like, would you rather punch Chris Brown or slap Rihanna? Like, and everybody knows, like, what happened between them. And Snapchat made a poll about that on its channel.
Wow.
Why?
So, yeah. So I want to pretend that
wild.
I'm not. Yeah. Snapchat is not really known for keeping the ball in control. they fumble a lot.
Okay. That's wild. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, who, I really also, people should follow you, find you and follow you on social media, because I so enjoy your posts. You know, you do these five things posts, and they're really like, things that I want to say out loud and I don't. And I'm always kind of like, I admire you for being able to say some of the stuff you do, just because and the people you are friends with react in a positive way. You don't have, you know, a scattering of friends that are like, no, the Confederate flag is good, we need it, you know, which I do have family and stuff.
Yeah. Anybody can find me on those. Yeah, if you look for David Barry, Berry on any of Emily's friend lists, you'll probably find me across the different channels. But yeah, my five things. I appreciate that. I have some fun with that.
I enjoy that so much because always on point.
Well, what did I say yesterday? I said if you want reluctant white people to care about racism, you can make it a statue in a park they never go to.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, I have a little fun with that sometimes.
Do you have any dad jokes?
Dad jokes. Oh, man. Yeah, actually, this one's really cheesy. I think I might have two, actually. What was you hear about the two cell phones that got married?
Mm-mm.
No, right? They say the ceremony was great, but the reception was fantastic.
Nice.
Yeah.
Can you hear me now?
I'm stealing that one. I'm stealing it.
My dad, one of my favorite memories of my dad, he was really funny. Like, I wish I could remember all of his jokes. I know that when my brother took his girlfriend to my dad's work to meet him, my dad said, "Where's your seeing eye dog?" Which I thought was funny. yeah, kind of rough. but every Christmas is my favorite thing to tell. Like, I really love Christmas. I always have. And, you know, my dad on Christmas would always work because we had to be at my mom's in the morning anyway. So he would take the shift so that the younger guys with young kids could be home with their family. And he was a houseman. So when you were at a hotel and you call, you know, can you bring me an iron or a crib or whatever, he would be the one to do that. And on Christmas, he worked at the Camelback Inn, which is like a really high-end resort and hotel here. It's like one of the top ones, if not the top one here in town. I mean, I guess the Biltmore's nicer, but he would wear a Santa hat, but my dad had a similar sense of humor to me that he would put cardboard in the hat and wear it straight up. And it was just the most hilarious thing, like just such a goof. Like he did stuff like that all the time.
And dads can get away with that.
Because they're dads. Well, and the whole time I was listening to your description of your dad's reaction, it kind of like physically pained me because I'm like, you're so lucky to still have your dad. And he obviously loves you so much, and it's such a fortunate thing. And it sounds like you really lucked out. That's wonderful.
Yeah, and you know what? He's really lucky to have a son. He raised a son that's understandable. And, you know, you guys are still able to keep your relationship strong, man. That's pretty awesome.
Thank you guys for saying that. Yeah, it's funny how life works out because, you know, I'm a really outgoing, you know, type of person. I communicate, you know, through words and that's just sort of my thing. And my dad's always been the opposite. And in a really backwards way, if this had never happened, you know, my father and I would have always had a nice relationship, but maybe not a great one. And my father and I now, since this all happened, talk more than ever about more,
aww,
you know, than ever. And it's because, you know, my dad, for any, you know, number of reasons about his own upbringing, is, you know, just kind of a guy who's kept a wall up. And it's kind of hard to keep a wall up that high when, you know, the biggest secret that you've ever had is revealed. Then what else are you going to keep to yourself after that?
You ever goof on your dad about the whole situation and to lighten it up?
Like joking with him and stuff. Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
we've really made light of it and stuff like that. You know, the basketball thing comes up a lot because it was a really big part of my relationship with my father. You know, all through growing up, we were, you know, Michael Jordan was coming up, and you know, when I was a kid, and that was everything. You know, so we'll still talk about sports, and he has no bones about telling me that he could probably still whoop me now. you know, at this point, my dad's 62, and so yeah, we'll talk about those things. And you know, the fact that, who knows, you know, anytime an Ancestry.com DNA test goes on sale, I'll probably have another couple siblings in 2 months. comes up a lot. And so, which is funny because it's happening right now. On Father's Day, they always go on sale.
I just saw it when I pulled it up. I'm like, I'm going to buy it now. It's $59.
Yeah, exactly. It's as good of a deal as you'll get. So check in with me again probably 2 months from now, and I'll have more for you. But we're able to.
And then it'll turn out that you and I are siblings.
God, wouldn't that be something?
That would be something, but it can't possibly be. But I know my
dad,
my son did the DNA test, and he met a woman through that was my dad's cousin that I knew of her, but I never met her. So I know at least it tracks back for my dad. Now my mom, I mean, she had gave birth to me. So, and I'm just like, we have the same mental health issues. So that apple didn't fall far from that crazy tree. So.
That tree.
The apple didn't fall far from the crazy tree. Do we have any callers with dad jokes, Dave?
Let me
before
check.
I'm not sure.
I'm not sure. Yeah, no, we don't. Yeah, we don't. Not yet.
Okay. Well, if you don't mind, I've got a little final thought thing that I recorded. We're adding this segment to the show at the end of the show each week. Final thoughts where we kind of just share, or I'll just share like what's on my mind for that week. And this week it's Father's Day. So I just wanted to give a little tribute. Did you get the MP3 I sent you, Dave?
I certainly did. Do you want me to play that now?
Yeah.
All right, give me a few seconds here.
So I'm Elias Duenas, father of our son of David Duenas.
So I wanted to talk to you today because it's Father's Day, and do a brief little interview with you and get your opinion on some things and just ask you some questions about your dad.
What?
Tell me your first memory of your dad that you remember.
The first memory of my dad I was coming home from school, and I remember the look in his eye was kind of different today, and I was like, oh, something new, and he was like, we're going to go to the movie today, and I was like, okay, so he took us all to the movies, and we went to go see some random movie, and actually, that's actually a really tough question, because I don't know, a lot of my memories have my dad, because my dad was very spontaneous.
Okay.
I remember days that he would just pick me up from school randomly, and he was like, I want to go see movies. And I would just be so excited, and I was like, yeah, of course, because, you know, like, your kids get pulled out of class, it's always, like, exciting, especially when you don't know why or anything.
Yeah.
Like, cool.
Okay. What would you say is something that he does that he doesn't realize that you notice that makes him, like, a good dad? You know, what kind of example does he set for you that you're like, I'm really glad he's my dad because he sets this example for me?
My dad's a complicated guy.
Oh, wow.
Always for a reason. What I appreciated very much, which I still do, is how clean he was. My dad was very clean. Never made a mess. He would sweep it up. And I don't know. My dad was always a super clean guy that I just always appreciated because he respected himself. Makes you really respect everything you have. And makes you not very much a spoiled because, you know, makes you appreciate and take care of you as well.
Yeah, he's a pretty, like, he works really hard, right? Like, he works really hard to make a good life, I think, for his family. What is your favorite memory of him?
Favorite memory? When you ask somebody for a favorite memory of, like, a loved one, it's hard to pick one, but me and my dad always have these long talks, and I'm never going to forget all the long talks we have. I know that he might forget some of the long talks, but a lot of them have, like, very good morals, and he gives me great advice, so hard to pick one.
Okay.
Because my dad would always little hours of our family history, and I just love listening to our family history and just love learning about my dad's thoughts, because my dad really has great ideas and morals. So I try to idolize him in that sense.
That's nice. When you have kids, what do you think is going to be, what are some lessons or things that you want to carry forward that your dad has taught you or the way he's been a parent to you?
I think the best thing that my dad's ever done to me is he's been a father, not my friend, which is weird to say, but he's been kind of both, but he always made sure that he made me recognize he's my father.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I want my kids to realize, because I don't want to be, you see these kids nowadays that all push, they're pushing their parents around, and I don't want that to happen to my kids.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know, him being so stern and on that whole idea of his philosophy of being father first and then friend second, I think I want to carry that on.
Okay. What about in terms of how he relates
boundaries have you set in that regard that you want to continue on in your marriage in the future?
I would say the fact my dad just goes above and beyond my mom. Like, every little decision is always my mom's feeling first. If he sees something my mom doesn't like, he immediately like start like talking bad about it just so my mom would, you know, be like, yeah, get her in her little mood.
Aww.
Going to sit down and watch these boring X-Files factions of just murders that my mom loves to hate. I guess my dad, in his own philosophy, love is something that you just, care for them 100%. No matter if it's tedious to a bad thing or a good thing, he treats it the same.
Okay. What is something that you could say to your dad now that you wouldn't feel comfortable maybe, like, just saying to him in a normal environment?
I don't think I have anything. Me and my dad have always been kind of honest with each other. My dad's always wanted to have an open sort of talk sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Where he doesn't want me to be afraid of talking to him.
Yeah. So what about your brother? What have you seen in their relationship that kind of makes you happy or makes them happy?
My father have a tough love relationship where it's just, you know, you got to be persistent, I guess. And my dad is just one of those guys that doesn't give up and he's going to be by his side. I know that.
So just kind of round out the end of the interview here. What do you want to say to your dad on Thursday?
I just want to say how proud I am of the podcast that it is, because I see every video, I'm subscribed, I watch almost every one. I'm just proud of him for that. He's following his dream, because my dad has always been an entertainer, and I can tell it's in his blood. He's a singer, he wanted to be a movie writer. He just has that entertaining vibe that he could just grab anybody and talk to them. Just has that personality. And I admire him for that. So thank you, Dad.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much, Elias, for coming on the pod. Your dad won't know until we play this what you said. So what's your favorite dad joke that he's told you? Because I think we're taking calls as dad jokes. What's your favorite dad joke?
Like, you know what, Mexican, let's talk. So, talk is
taking
a little different. So,
cheese.
So, he's like, thank you.
Cheese
out of my life.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Wow.
Happy Father's Day.
Thank you. That was kind of, like, weird for me. You know, I actually had.
I don't know if
little,
I'm going to get, like, kicked off the network or what?
No. But
this
I
might be the last
this,
episode
I,
of Emily Talks. I don't know.
That was a real surprise, Emily. Thank you for that. You know, I'm very, very close to my kids and stuff. I was gonna have this music in the background for Dave when he was on. We were interviewing him, but I guess I might as well play it for myself here while I'm telling you all how I'm feeling right now about this surprise interview that you just gave me. You know, that was awesome. No, that was great. Man, that was. Thank you so much. That means a whole lot to me, man. That you got my son, my youngest. Yeah, you know. I know my oldest one is.
I tried to get the rest of them, but it wasn't working out.
Yeah, my oldest boy, he's working. He's like, you know, he's out and about and stuff. He's working like a lot of long hours right now. He's happy that he's back at work and stuff. But yeah, man, that's, you know, what's funny? Like my kids never really tell me what they were saying right now. Like a lot of it's the first time me even really hearing this, because I am a dad that's always been very strict with them.
You know, and they've always questioned that. They've always been like, you know, why can't I do this? Or why? Because, like, I never allowed my kids to do sleepovers. Never did that until they were 18. Believe that?
Yeah.
And then I allowed them to go with their friends and stuff. But and it was just because the way I had grown up. You know, I grew up in a very dysfunctional home, and my old neighborhood was pretty bad. You know, I was a very troublesome kid. And I didn't want my kids to live through that. So I always worked very, very hard to give my children a chance of living a different way and seeing things through a different – I'm going to take Dave's a line, different lens. And
yeah.
So thank you, man. I really appreciate that. That was
happy Father's Day.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you.
Happy Father's Day to – is Dave still on the line? Happy Father's Day to your dad.
Well, here, thank you, guys.
Yeah, and happy Father's Day to Louis, my husband. He is the best dad and other dads in my life, and I appreciate them as well. So I'm very thankful for the dads and the dad that I had, and I miss him. So thank you, guys.
Yeah, I do.
Thanks for coming on. Huh?
I do have a few dad jokes if you want to hear some.
Yeah, let's fire it up.
Okay. I got a good one here. You could use this one for your dad there, Dave. What do you call it when Batman skips church?
I like to guess on that one.
Christian Bale.
That was a good one. That was a good one. I think Louis will enjoy that one. I'm going to tell it to him.
Oh, that's better the second time. I like that.
What is the difference between a tire? This is for Dave. This is a joke, actually, that I have for you, Dave. There you go. What is the difference between a tire and 365 used condoms?
It's going to be something about rubber.
One is a good year. The other is a great year.
That was a good one.
You love that one. With your
permission. All right, my last one, and then I'm done. Okay. What did one saggy boob say to the other saggy boob?
I don't have any guesses for that one.
All right. If we don't get some support soon, people are going to think we're nuts.
Nice. That was a good one. I got to share all these with my older kids.
Yeah.
All right, guys.
That was pretty.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. This is a fun show, and I really, like, definitely follow Dave. You know, follow his story. We'll check in with him. When we do my live ancestry reveal, we'll get you on the show again if you're available, and you could be here whenever I find out that I'm, like, you know, whatever. I don't know. I've been told I'm mostly a quarter Italian and then some English and German. That's what I know, but we'll see.
Oh.
All right, guys.
Let's fit Bible. I appreciate you having me very much.
Yeah, no problem. I don't actually have final thoughts prepared because I was doing the interview for Dave. But I hope you guys have a great weekend. The listeners, thank you for listening. Share with your friends. And I will talk to you next week. Next week we have Susie Doat, who is a death investigator. And she does, like, medical examiner type stuff, but for homicides and prison deaths and that kind of thing. So she's going to talk about what she does in her job and some of the stories she's come across, and it should be really super interesting because even the little primer she sent me when I booked her was just so, like, crazy. So I can't wait for next week. So definitely tune in then. Every Sunday, 10 a.m., emilytalks.com, and we're part of the Leave It in the Ring radio network. So thank you. Crying crazy, yeah.
I saw him, that's the guy that's